Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Mike Cosentino. We got Carolyn Warner is our guest this morning. Carolyn goes way back and in Arizona politics and in Arizona life and in the role of Arizona women's struggles. And to be honest, they're going to be stepping in here really soon now. The breakfast got a little long this morning for my co-host, Steve Williamson, who's taxiing Carolyn to the studios here. But I'm going to we heard Carolyn was our guest speaker at the annual meeting of Democrats of the Red Rocks yesterday. And for a lot of us, for a long time, first of all, when we thought of education, we thought of Carolyn Warner. I mean, she was the superintendent of public instruction for 12 years. When I first became a teacher, she was it. She was the only superintendent I knew for 12 years. And in that, she was quite distinctive for her speaking style and her voice. She had as you'll hear, she has the gravelly voice presentation, and certainly a direct and humorous and cutting and acerbic wit, The fact that we share an acerbic wit is one of the many things that I like about Carolyn Warner. But we're going to talk about her political career. We're going to talk about her roles in education. We're going to talk about the party leadership and the Democratic Party then, Democratic Party now. And I know one of Carolyn's favorite things are women's issues. And so we're going to talk about some of her roles in the state of Arizona regarding some of the women's things. And I hate to call it a struggle, but it indeed has been that. And here is Steve Williamson right now.
If you wonder why he usually he lets me talk, but today he just said, sit silently there. Don't say anything while I do the introduction. And he's done the introduction, and we have Carolyn Warner. And where to start, Carolyn, in talking with you.
Yeah, we just got started, actually. I didn't do a complete introduction.
I was thinking we did Child Protective Services last week, and Carolyn addressed that in her talk, and we talked about education, and Carolyn talked about education.
Well, I was telling that the only superintendent of public instruction I knew was Carolyn Warner for 12 years. She was at the head of that agency, and of course it's a shadow of its former self, but so it's hard to, when you literally grow up in your profession with one person at the helm, and it was Carolyn, and what a presence she was, as she does in everything. Well, we're going to give her a chance to talk. Carolyn, please say something about your own past, regardless of whether I said it. Please talk tell us those things that you want us to know.
The first important thing to know is that she, like somebody, a close personal friend, was born in Oklahoma.
That's right.
He's a fellow Oklahoman.
You know, we try to leave that part out.
Ardmore, Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, we were coming across the country, and our mattress fell off in Arizona. So, you know, that's why we settled here. We had to retrieve our possession.
As maybe the only good reason. No, there are many good reasons.
There are many good reasons, indeed. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me. I am just delighted. What you don't know about my checkered past is that I started in radio as a child, actually.
Oh, really?
I was the first woman FM announcer in Oklahoma.
Wow.
And I had a huge part. It was tremendous.
Yeah.
Nobody had FM, you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
So they didn't care, you know. I was sort of a throwaway. And I had a little broadcast booth that was about the size of a telephone booth. And I had a little board and a lever, and the AM announcer would say, "This is WKYAM," in his gorgeous, melodious voice. And I would pull my lever back and say, "And FM, and close it. And that was it. And I did that every 15 minutes. I was a star.
So you were the guy like on CNN. This.
Uh-huh. That
great,
is
the
right.
Great actor that did this is CNN. This is FM radio.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That
maybe
was
we
it.
Should talk, McKellen, because you've talked about what's going on in American politics. We have so much violent, angry feeling floating around, and so much extremism and so much polarization. You've been involved as a Democrat. If I was thinking of the most Democratic Democrat I know, it's probably you. You've been involved for decades. What do you think?
You know, I was born a Democrat. My father was a state senator in Oklahoma, a Democrat. When I started in politics, I was 9 years old. I will not tell you what year that was, all right? So I started handing out flyers for a representative whose name was Victor Wickersham. And I would stand on the street corner in our little town, in our little county, Ouachita County, Oklahoma, and hand out flyers for Victor Wickersham. Yeah. And then subsequent to that, I was called upon to be a stump speaker. Nobody knows today what a stump speaker is. But then you had a car. I was too young to drive, so my mother drove, or I had a driver, with a record player in the back seat. And that was organized so that it was level and wouldn't jiggle. Yeah. And then you played records. You had speakers on top of the car.
Oh.
And you drove through town.
Yes.
And you worked up a crowd. And you said, come and listen to the little lady who's going to be speaking on the courthouse steps at 2 o'clock for Senator Robert S. Kerr. You must come. And all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we'd work up a crowd. And then I'd go to the courthouse steps and make a speech. So I started doing that when I was about 10, 12, 13, only because I had this weird voice for a young woman.
Yeah.
I've always had it. And so they thought I was sort of a...
But got you noticed.
They thought I was sort of a freak.
In a good way.
In a good way. In any case, I've been in politics for a long time. Politics used to be fun. Politics used to be serving. It was like serving on a school board. It was something you did. It was your payback to community. It was like tithing to your church. It was something you just did. And you did it with a certain amount of joy and pride and feeling that you were making a significant difference. When I started speaking on the circuit in Oklahoma, I was much too young to vote because then the voting age was 21.
Right, that's
and
right.
So I did radio spots for our Senator Elmer Thomas and Senator Bob Kerr, and I started out by saying, I'm Carolyn Rex wrote then, right. Too young to vote, but it is my future that you're voting on November or whatever the date was, and I want you to listen to what we are hoping you're going to do. So it was a time in which your Republican friends were dear friends. It was like being in a different denomination.
Right.
But you were all believing in the same, essentially the same things. You believed in America and the flag, and you were patriots.
Greatest good for the greatest number, things like that.
That's it. Greatest good for the greatest number. Well, here's what I fear has happened today. And Stephen and I were talking about this morning. I fear that we have lost our hate object. And I believe there are a certain number of people, a certain group of people who have somewhat of an inferiority complex and don't feel secure in and of themselves, don't feel totally capable unless they're totally in charge. And today, you're not in charge.
No.
None of us is in charge.
None of us is in charge.
You can be the best athlete in your high school and you're going to end up in college and you're not going to be the best. You
absolutely.
Can be the smartest person and you, there's always people smarter than you. There's people stronger than you, younger than you. Prettier than you, whatever.
It has always been thus, however. Today, that reality is beginning to sink in and people are feeling less in charge. Why do they feel less in charge? Why do they feel that they are lacking in power? It is because the rate of change is so incredible that none of us can keep up with it. And it causes many people to lose their balance, to become insecure, to be dizzied by all of this change and to feel threatened. And once threatened, defense mechanisms set in. And I was telling Stephen this morning, wasn't it wonderful when we could hate Russia?
Yeah.
I mean, that was marvelous. We had a hate object. We had a group, a huge monolithic group that we could hate. It was the evil empire. And now this is a time in which America has become almost cancerous in that certain cells, certain people in our body politic have decided to turn on us.
Turn on each other.
Each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is so sad. Making up fantastic realities. I said yesterday before Stephen's group, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had an asteroid, one that we could destroy, but an asteroid plummeting toward Earth.
We could all focus on
and
that.
And we could all focus our hate on the asteroid. We could probably blow it up just with the hate that has been accumulating. But in any case, we need, as humans, apparently some need, an object to hate.
It's certainly nothing new in American politics. I mean, you know, from the Scarlet Letter to, you know, to the Crucible and all of those things, we find something to blame it on. but it certainly is a unique to blame it on poor women and children. It just doesn't seem to be like a good idea. I still read the Fox quote. You know, Fox News, rich people paying rich people to tell rich people, to tell middle class people to blame poor people. you know, this is a sign that, and it works, and it works quite well.
But here we are turning on ourselves, and that is, the old quotation of, you know, individually we can be broken, united we cannot.
I want to jump into women's issues. I mean, if you have more to say on that, then please. But I want to jump into.
Well, let's before we do that, Mike. Let's ask Carolyn. Do you have any solution to this? Do you have any? What's the way out of this? The country's becoming more fractured. People on the far right, I think, are extraordinarily angry. Some of them, many of us are older. We're used to dealing with Republicans, and now we've got people who seem very, 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 very extreme, and extraordinarily angry. What can we do? Is there a short term prescription? And then let's talk about the other issue.
The Republican Party, as we know it, or knew it, was a tremendous influence in America and was our balancing act as we all walked the tightrope of maintaining America as the greatest nation on earth. They were a balancing act. A two-party system, in my view, is an absolute essential in a country such as ours. And I remember when Goldwater was defeated so incredibly, my husband and I actually had a discussion about whether or not we should re-register as Republicans because we wanted to maintain that concept of a two-party system, checks and balances, just like our three branches of government. But today, the Republicans that we knew have fractured. So it's such a balkanized party. There are all kinds of factions within it, and I think the Teapublicans are the most dangerous of all because they live in a fantasy world. They are cloaked in hate. They are fearful of everything. They want, as Karl Rove once said, to shrink government to the point that it's small enough that we can drown it in a bathtub. I find that to be almost frightening and bizarre. It is without government, what do you have? It's a very simple thing. You have anarchy.
Right.
I'm not at all certain that anarchy is not what the Teapublicans are hoping for. They're working for it.
Well, that's a bleak, that's a bleak prediction, and I'm hoping not, and I'm hoping that, like a lot of fringe elements in both parties, that they will, you know, the body, the main body politic will prevail and they will go away.
I believe it's happening now.
But they're having an effect on our politics, aren't they? On distorting women's issues, on distorting, I mean, they say the most extraordinary things. I think most men know to stay out of women's issues in one sense. So, you know, we're not going to talk, we're not going to order them around about, you know, contraception or something. It's just, you know, it's affecting a lot of different areas, and this kind of extremism is pushing the dialogue that Mike was talking about.
It is indeed. You had asked, do I have a ready solution, Steve, and I didn't answer because I don't. But I do believe that the point you're making about the far edges are beginning to melt around the edges a bit. And I believe that sort of hate cannot be sustained because it's so debilitating. So I don't think they can last. I'm beginning to believe and to see slight signs that the Republican Party, the real Republican Party, is beginning to take charge again. Some of the actions that have occurred in the legislature at the national level have been very encouraging.
Yes, they have.
Very encouraging. And so I think perhaps this is a gradual thing, like the melting of ice. It'll take a little time.
Right.
And if an icicle doesn't fall and pierce us through, we're likely going to survive this ultra right wing scary.
The country has survived these ultra right wing movements, the Sedition Act, and so forth. It's all through its history. McCarthy didn't really last that long.
No, one of the things that's made
it felt like he lasted that long, though.
During the time, if you were a target of his, it did. But one of the things that we have to mention, because we are politically savvy people sitting in this room, and that is the Tea Party is funded by the Americans for Prosperity, is funded by the Koch brothers.
That's correct.
That they have, unlike other perhaps grassroots movements that may have been on the fringe, they have this constant source of funding. You give even a bad idea, well funded, has more staying power. And so I think the other thing that's happening, as Carolyn already pointed out, is that it's starting to fade. And one of the reasons is they feel manipulated. The issues that they're being told to care about, not feeding children, you know, cutting foods, are not the issues that the Tea Party wants to be involved with. They want to be involved in some cases, I'm guessing, some legitimate problems where government may overstep its bounds on occasion.
But, you know, I am more concerned about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, than...
Favorite topic.
Oh, is it your favorite topic?
I come back to it all the time. Well, there's nothing like... We're going to tell what it is in a minute. You're going to tell what it is. But there's no answer on the left. Everything else, as we talked about, is kind of a theme of the show this morning. There's a balance. Yeah, we got something on the right, we got something on the left, and we struggle to prevail with our point of view for a moment, maybe move our cause a little more forward. But Alec, tell us.
Well, most people don't. You people that are very well educated, very knowledgeable, politically very savvy. You say, tell me how you feel about Alec, and they say, who is Alec? I had a friend named Alec at one time. I think I've probably written him off. No.
They're dangerous. Alec. Confusions could
That's
occur,
right.
Yes.
ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council. And you're speaking of funding.
Right.
That there is a difference today in that unlimited dollars are available, virtually unlimited dollars available to build the hate agenda. And so that is, I think, different from all of these other. McCarthy didn't have an organization with unlimited dollars to hate people and to look for communists under your bed. He just spewed.
I don't think most Tea Party people understand how this whole thing got going, that it's been funded by extremely right-wing billionaires from the very beginning. And that things like Americans for Prosperity, and there's dozens of them. And when we first started on the air, we talked about these different
groups. Yes, we did. We labeled
them.
They're
all front groups for big money.
Correct.
And they're getting ordinary people to sign on to an agenda of the right wing of the wealthiest people in the country. It's not even ordinary wealthy people. It's an extreme billionaires group. You know, Eisenhower referred to Texas billionaires as being the last guys who didn't believe in the New Deal, but these are new billionaires from all over.
That's right, they are. And they are incredible. They are not powerful themselves, but their money can sway and has been swaying America. And in fact, is the lifeblood of Tea Party types, who are naive, who are basically probably very good people, but have bought in to the hate agenda. And there is a good feeling for people who hate. They have an object. They have something they can focus upon. And it's tragic. I mean, if they could focus on love instead of hate, if they could focus on children
service.
And the future, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah.
Because they have this vitality and this energy. But in any case, ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council. It has taken control of 17 states in America. And what it is...
How?
Is,
in what way?
Have elected, in many cases, both houses of the legislature. And in most cases of those 17, they've also elected the governor. So they have total control in 17 states. ALEC is funded by the same people, Stephen, that you've referenced. It is funded by the ultra, ultra wealthy, those that have so much money that they can buy a yacht and not ask how much it costs, that old line. The organization of the ALEC organization, American Legislative Exchange Council, meets three times a year. They are shockingly, a 501c3. They are tax exempt, so every $1 billion that Koch puts into ALEC is spent. None of it is taxed. It is tax-free. They meet with legislators that they invite to attend their national meetings, and there they have a team of lawyers prepped and ready, and they have various committees, some on utilities. They have a committee on education. They have a committee on welfare, committee on prisons prison-related items, corrections, and those committees then draft legislation that is pro, theoretically at the beginning, just pro-business. Now it is pro the hate agenda. And those legislators then go back to their states with their little handful of bills, all written, all ready to submit. If they submit those bills and they are successful, they are applauded. They are helped in their election. And the reason when you mentioned that it may be melting a bit around the edges is that this year in Arizona, every Republican office holder has an opponent in the primary.
Yeah.
Which is shocking. Because ALEC says, if you don't do what we want you to do, we will run somebody against you.
And they're holding true to that.
Yeah.
So the more moderate but to their credit, the Republicans are fielding more moderate candidates.
I think
so. The Republican Party eliminated our Republican state senator. They decided to do it.
That's right.
Tom O'Halloran.
Yeah,
they decided to eliminate
Tom. He was just entirely too moderate and too rational.
Yes, rational. It'll get you in lots of trouble sometimes.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll say clearly that Tom was a Republican, but on education and the environment, boy, he certainly knew where he came from, and he had the support, I think, certainly of the majority of his constituency here in Sedona on the environment and on education. He was... reasonable. I won't call him a Democrat. I won't go that far, but he was at least reasonable. The most reasonable Republican on those issues I'd ever met. And,
I have neighbors who registered Republican just so they could vote for him.
Yeah.
Is that
they said
to
me, that was really cute. They said to me, oh, we're not really Republicans.
I knew dozens of
and
people.
And they explained to
that.
Me, you know, how things worked in Sedona. They wanted to vote for Tom.
I want to talk about Carolyn. Carolyn, you wrote 4 books.
Oh, yes. I have nothing to do in my spare time.
what's spare
you know,
time?
I'm the mother of 6 children.
Oh, geez.
And we're Methodists, so don't try and figure that out.
You said it that you don't see any difference between being a Methodist and being a Democrat. What did you mean by that?
There, I am a very strong Methodist, and yesterday I was saying I pledge to two causes.
Yeah.
Consistently. The Democratic Party and the Methodist Church.
Yes, right.
Those two. Because they are almost interchangeable. The belief system, the philosophy, the discipline of the Methodist Church and the belief system of the Democratic Party are so intertwined that I have a great deal of difficulty differentiating.
Right.
Because Thomas Jefferson said it all in one sentence. He said, there are extraordinary capabilities in ordinary people given the opportunity. That's why I'm so involved in education, providing the opportunity for just people like me, ordinary people, to have a chance at least to fulfill their ultimate potential. And that's the life of our children. Every child is of consequence. Every child is our child. Doesn't matter their color or their race or their nationality or their belief system. They're all our children because they are all the future that we have. And to damage our children and not provide for them and not care for them as our number one priority, I think is a damning statement about individuals who care more about themselves than the future.
On Democratic Perspectives, we sometimes discuss consuming our young for whatever reasons, in other words, to keep things going, we're willing to sacrifice our young without health care and our young with, in as far as education is concerned.
Indeed.
It seems to be not a sustainable, not a productive thing to do. But
well, it is gradually, not so gradually, moving America into a second-class status where we have been number one for as long as America has existed. Democratic Party, by the Thomas Jefferson Party, is the oldest existing party on planet Earth.
What a fascinating statistic.
And the Constitution of the United States of America is the only living constitution still operative of all of those.
You know, I love that because we're constantly talking about how young America is and how ancient Europe is and how ancient. But all of those countries, we can talk about my home country, Italy, or any other for that matter.
They've
been around a long time, but they've existed under different founding documents through all those thousands of years.
Indeed.
We've had the same founding document for all that
time. We had a constitution, whatever its flaws, that's lasted all these years
and provided
a basis and was amendable and changeable.
Correct.
And short enough that everybody can have their own interpretation. But it has worked.
It's worked amazingly well. Our state constitutions, many of them formed on the basis of the national constitution. And, for example, in Arizona, our line in the constitution is that education should be as nearly free as possible for our university system.
Yes.
And, of course, that is no longer the case.
Can they just completely ignore that and keep raising tuition?
Well, let me just say that in Kansas, there was a book. Do you remember Whatever Happened to Kansas?
Yeah, what's the matter with Kansas?
What's the matter with Kansas?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, it has gotten worse.
Oh, my.
Not better.
That's not
Brownback, now is before his Supreme Court in the state of Kansas for so underfunding education that they believe the state is in danger in terms of its future. So Kansas is beginning to shrink. Their intellectual growth has stopped. Their funding of universities and K-12. But Arizona has nothing to brag about.
No, it doesn't.
We are third from the bottom. Let me give you the statistics about Arizona. Do you know that in Vermont, Wyoming, New York, District of Columbia, and a couple of other states, they spend for their youngsters, they invest in their youngsters' education, K-12, $10,000 a year more than we do.
Jeez. What we could do with that.
$10,000 a year more. In Arizona spends $8,000 less per child than Alaska, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. So those that spend less on education are only Idaho, Nevada, and Utah.
Wow. And it's not because it's so cheap to live here. I'm speaking as a former teacher. It's not like you can put less into education, and because we have such a low cost of living, it's just not true.
Well, in Arizona, the teacher-student ratio is 21 students to one teacher. The national average is 15 to one. We are crippling our future.
Absolutely.
It isn't, I guess, intentional, because it's been going on for quite some time. We are the state that has reduced education funding faster than any other state in the nation, save three.
$3 billion in 4 years. This is a state that we try to run the whole thing on $10 billion. I don't think we do it very well on $10 billion, but they've cut $3 billion, almost $2.8 billion. $2.8 billion in the last 4 years out of education. It's a staggering figure when, you know, could we throw figures around all the time, but this state.
They've cut more, Mike, than any other state.
Exactly. Exactly. You can buy an election for $30,000, and that's why some of the extreme right wingers like to put their money into statewide races in places like Arizona.
Say,
hey, it costs me millions to buy a senator. I can buy a state
legislator.
A federal legislator, a state legislature, and I can buy pretty cheaply in places like Arizona, Oklahoma, and other places.
Well, they've done it in 17 states, and in each of the states, I am amused by, I probably shouldn't mention the state, but it's an A state, okay?
Yeah, right.
This woman, a member of the ALEC group, took her bills back and introduced them, and one of them, she neglected to take the name ALEC off it. And so the clerk of the Senate said, sent it back to her and said, I think maybe you wanted to put your name in here.
She turned it in as she brought it.
It is a famous incident.
Now, here's the key. The key to ALEC and the key to the state takeovers is that these same billionaires that you reference with unlimited funds are supporting, along with many businesses and industries. However, some of the businesses and industries are pulling out.
Yes.
Coca-Cola pulled out of their, so I think they were giving $1 million a year, because they were looking for favorable legislation for business. I don't think that's illegal, or perhaps certainly not immoral. Target pulled out. Walmart pulled out. They were putting in a lot of money. And what happens is they hire a bank of lawyers that have the legislation already, but they have the people meet in groups, committees, and theoretically they develop the legislation. They get a sense of ownership, and then they take it back. It's pre-written by and large. But what is fairly interesting is that the ALEC group met in Washington about a month, 2 months ago, 6 weeks ago, and they called it the Prodigal Son Conference. And what they were trying to do was to invite these that had left.
They'd fallen away.
They'd been out there, you know, and they wanted them to come back home and put their money in so they can continue this. It's a very expensive thing they're doing, buying legislators.
If we step back and look at this thing as, you know, maybe a little more nonpartisan. It's, you know, as government has shrunk, as government has been forced to shrink, as it's been, maybe in some cases rightfully so, you've been watching every penny. There are legislators at the state level have no staff. I remember when I called Andy Tobin, speaking of a guy that went to, as far as I'm concerned, went to Phoenix as a reasonable Republican and drank the Kool-Aid and now is not. But he has.
I think it's survival for many of them.
Okay. Right.
I'm not entirely certain they believe.
That may be a fair thing to say.
But I do believe they did drink the Kool-Aid.
But he answered his own phone.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm saying, and I did, you know.
That's unbelievable.
I'm saying, he said, yeah, I share a secretary with somebody down the street. So the fact that he can't write legislation, that he has no time and no staff, and certainly no money, for writing legislation is, and then boom, here comes ALEC along. So I'm not offering this as an excuse. Last person in the world that's going to offer the Republicans an excuse is me. But because of this shrinking of government, it's almost, yeah, you can see why they would go to these guys, these racks of lawyers, that have at least well-worded legislation.
But if any of your listeners would care to look at the kinds of bills that they have written that they will recognize in
Absolutely.
Arizona, they can go to the ALEC website.
Yes, you may.
And
yes,
if you will scroll through, you will find their 600 of their bills are synopsized there. So you can see exactly. I would recommend that everybody go to the ALEC website and take a look.
I agree. It's
highly informative.
As a Common Cause has done the best research, at
yes.
least so far, on ALEC.
Well, we lost Bob Edgar, which was so sad. He was here in Arizona, went back home, and was hoping to create a Common Cause here in Arizona, a branch. And he and Bill Moyer have exposed ALEC in a very significant way. And if you go on the
Moyer's website,
you can get a video
yes.
of what ALEC does that explains it so much better than I can.
Yes.
But Bill Moyer and Bob Edgar did such a great job in exposing ALEC. And, of course, Common Cause has referenced ALEC to IRS and is contesting the fact that they are a 501c3.
Ah, well, good for them. That's long overdue. I mean, ALEC's been around since the early 90s, and, at least in a powerful way. Well, let's talk about Carolyn Warner for a minute here. One of your books, I want to read the title. It was, The Last Word, something, and I won't say anything about women, but it's called The Last Word, A Treasury of Women's Quotes. What motivated this? And it sounds like kind of a fun book, Carolyn.
Well, it is kind of a fun book. There is as many chapters, 40 chapters, but there are no chapters on hate, crime, war.
No quotes on that.
Evil. They're all positive.
Do you have a favorite quote from the book?
That's hard to say. There are so many. Irma Bombeck, of course.
Yes, speaking of Arizona.
A dear friend. And Irma had so many fabulous quotations that she was being introduced by this wonderful young man for a speech that she was preparing to make. And she got up and she looked at him and she looked at the audience. And she said, you know, I have a cookie sheet that's older than he is. She had such a great sense of humor.
Yep.
She introduced me one time when I was doing a round of political campaign speeches and at a campaign fundraising dinner, and she said, Carolyn is the only woman I know that sends her oven out to be cleaned.
Nothing wrong with that.
Women in politics, a lot of what you've done in your whole life is to involve women more and more in politics,
yes.
empower them.
Yes.
And it's working. That part of it's working.
Well, right? I wish I could take credit for it, but it is working. It's evolutionary. It's bound to happen. We represent 51% of the population. It's just, I ran for the U.S. Senate, which few people know, and probably I should forget because I lost dramatically. But when I ran for the United States Senate, there was not a single woman in the Senate. That was in 1976. Most people weren't even born then.
I graduated from NAU that year.
Oh, good for you.
There you go.
Oh, I have just started a scholarship at NAU for Jerry Emmett. I don't know if you know.
We want to give a shout out to Jerry. I've been waiting this whole show to mention Jerry Emmett.
Good. Anybody that wishes to contribute, she will be 100 years old on the 16th of July. 100. Retired school teacher, one of the most remarkable people I've ever known, still is just as bright and knowledgeable. She can debate anybody on almost any topic.
I've heard her speak.
I'm going to tell us a Jerry story.
Tell the Jerry story.
Got a million of them because it's right here in Sedona.
Yes.
John O'Donnell and I, another candidate for state senate, we had come to a Democratic function in Sedona from Cottonwood, and we were two married guys at that time, and we were out for the night, but we had somebody tasked us with taking Jerry home. Jerry at 93. And so we're saying, well, this is not going to get in our way of stopping at the Oak Creek Brewery. And so we asked Jerry, Heck yeah, let's go. So we get to the Oak Creek Brewery and I propped this little woman up on this bar stool. I mean, she was just struggling to get up.
Yes.
All of the Oak Creek Brewery tables are high boys, as they say in the trade.
And she has shrunk over time.
Yeah. I get her up on the stool, just prop her right up there. And then she says, "Where's my beer?" So we order a beer, and we had a great time in the bar, in the brewery, Oak Creek Brewery, talking politics to Jerry, who obviously has a memory of Arizona politics.
Oh, she knew Governor Hunt, the first governor.
Oh, really?
Governor Hunt was the first governor, and these were days when automobiles were rare, and so she was at NAU. She is the oldest living graduate of NAU. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I was talking to President Hager about that the other day. Lisa Schnabli Heidegger is doing a history of NAU. She's such a great writer, and she's doing a history of NAU. So she interviewed Jerry for 3 hours, and she said, "I had to tear myself away. I wasn't through. There was much more to learn." But in any case, Jerry has, as you know, a story a minute.
But
when Governor Hunt was in Flagstaff at NAU for some event, and it was getting ready. They were getting ready for the Thanksgiving break. So he had a car, and he offered Jerry a ride back to Phoenix. She's from Gilbert. A ride back to Phoenix. And she had to decline because she worked in the cafeteria or something and had to be there over the holiday. But she tells this story and about his high, squeaky voice and what an intelligent man he was. She has known all of the politicians in America in Arizona for all of those years. So she's an amazing person.
Yeah, she really is. And I look forward to seeing her whenever I do.
You ought to have her up here on your show.
Well, I have kind of lost touch with her the last year or two, but she could handle it. I mean,
she walks a mile a day.
Push her ahead of me.
99 years.
Except for Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, she doesn't walk on Saturday.
She stays home, watches football, probably.
She goes to church and then watches football.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, we kind of got to wrap it up. We're running out of time.
We do want to mention Democrats of the Red Rocks as people are still helping us out. Democrats of the Verde Valley help us out on this show a little bit. Keep us on the air. We do want to mention one of our big fans, Cactus Kate. Give a little shout out to Cactus Kate out there down there in Old Town Cottonwood. Who helps keep us on the air just by listening, and that's a good thing too. That's the other way to help out Democratic Perspective. We want to talk some more about Democratic Party then and now. We'll mine Carolyn Warner's brain a little bit and find out about the old Democratic Party in Arizona and the new Democratic Party in Arizona. And as far as I'm concerned, the hope of the entire state is the Democratic Party in Arizona. Go ahead, Steve.
Next week, we begin a two-part series, breaking stories about Yavapai Community College. And to give you the one statistic that we're leading with is that 95% of the budget projected out for 10 years by Yavapai College is going to be spent in Prescott and Prescott Valley.
And
the Sedona campus is marked with zero amount of money.
Right.
The college is abandoning the Verde Valley, and we need to talk about that. We're going to have Bob Oliphant. We're going to have Counselor Barbara Luttrell. We're going to have Ruth Wicks on the show. And this is a breaking story. I think you will be surprised at this because the Verde Valley needs a strong and active community college here to help our young people get going in school. I've heard must have heard 100 stories about people who got their interest in educated, stimulated at the college in Clarkdale. Thank you very much for joining us. Join next week. We have a special breaking story. Lots of news, lots of stuff that'll be heard for the first time in the public starting next week.
Thanks.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.